Hello and welcome to the Football Diary podcast, where we'll be talking about the battle for fifth place, which had absolutely everything except for any form of defending. Liverpool take the priority there over Spurs with a 4-3 win. Leeds are desperate to get Bielsa back. Heck, at this rate, they might even take Jesse Marsh back. Maybe even David O'Leary, just to try and save off relegation. Bournemouth look pretty safe now. Gary O'Neill's done a phenomenal job there, and he's even managed to get level on points with Chelsea. So maybe Lampard should be at Bournemouth and they can look for a replacement there. Nottingham Forest, they are in a bit of trouble despite Keylor Navas' heroics at times. He makes a couple of mistakes that give 3 points to Brentford. And Manchester City are top of the league. At last, they get their crown back on the top. Do we expect to see them fall off? Probably not. But let's find something to talk about them anyway. It's the Football Diary podcast. Thanks for joining us. So, thank you, Dave, for being with me. It's been an interesting weekend, and with a Man United and an Aston Villa fan, it's rare that we'll not be fighting over this one, and safe to say it's not really worth talking about. But one game that did catch our attention, of course, and two teams that are also in a battle for Europe are Liverpool and Tottenham. And it looked like more of the same for Spurs in the opening 15 minutes, didn't it? 3-0 down within 15 minutes away from home. It is laughable. We can laugh at it. After the performance against Newcastle, I'm wondering if more fans will be getting a refund after this game, Dave, because once again, very poor defending from Spurs in that opening exchange, wasn't it?
It makes you wonder, actually, if any fans left any earlier than 25 minutes this time around. it was a game of kind of defensive errors, defensive blunders from both teams, to be honest, but it made for great viewing. And obviously the drama that with how the game ended, very comical in itself, but brilliant as well. You couldn't really sum it up. I just think there's so many people now actually jumping on kind of like the Spursy term. Like it's just the note. It's kind of almost trademark now, isn't it? To be honest,
it's presented itself very well in the last few weeks. We'll come back to Spurs. Let's give Liverpool some credit to start with. I think this is exactly the kind of result you expect from this current Liverpool squad. And we saw all the benefits that Liverpool have with that amazing front line. Luis Diaz is back and got a goal. Salah scored a penalty, so that's a bit of a monkey off his back. Curtis Jones even getting a goal. You expect Liverpool to score a lot of goals with this attacking squad. And in a game that means a lot for Liverpool's season, they've not got the easiest run-in necessarily. They're playing teams around them. But this is a great start for them, isn't it, Dave, as they hunt for some sort of European football next year?
Yeah, and obviously, you know, we don't know what it's going to be. It's looking unlikely that they'll get into the top four with how, obviously, United and Newcastle are doing ahead of them. I think it's probably a little bit too late. Too late. But what they are really starting to show a bit of consistency, and that's kind of, I think, all Liverpool fans have been what they've been looking for, really. They've shown it in moments, obviously, in previous weeks. The Arsenal game where they should have ran away with that game and they didn't. But what they have been starting to do is obviously they've started to show a lot more, obviously, of their attacking play, and they seem to be progressing quite nicely in some of those areas. Obviously, Trent's been given a different role, obviously, in previous weeks, and he's actually come to the fore. We're obviously talking him for the right reasons now as opposed to the wrong reasons. But it's just going to be interesting to see where they end up at the end of the season, because with time running out, so little games left, I just feel as though probably Europa League is probably the best what they can hope for. But I mean, in this game, obviously, the goals that they scored, I think the first one was really, really well worked. However, I think Fraser Forster has got to do better there. Obviously, Salah's looked a little bit more himself than previous weeks as well in this game. Gakpo, I thought, played really well as well.
Yeah, exactly.
I thought he had a great game. But I just feel as though I don't want to be too critical and say, obviously, goalkeeper should have been better here, defender should have been better. Virgil van Dijk, I thought, had quite a poor game. I think the way that Spurs were able to get in behind that back line, just with a diagonal ball over the top, it was just too easy. And it was the same. It was the same with Tottenham as well. Romero for the penalty. What was he doing? I don't know.
And he tries to appeal it. He tries to say no, foul. Are you joking? That guy's a calamity. But when have you ever seen Van Dijk sat down the way that Perisic did for him? Like that's so telling of where his confidence levels are at. We've given Liverpool credit for their attacking performance, but yeah, let's have a look at that defensive display from both sides. You've pointed out already Romero being ridiculous for the penalty. Van Dijk, obviously, for Kane's goal was poor too. The marking and the positional awareness for even Curtis Jones' goal early on, I just thought was so poor. Mm. When you've come off the back of a really good result against Man United in midweek, but that awful trip to Newcastle, the first 5 minutes, Tottenham should have been more organised than any team have been in the Premier League all season. And we really saw their lack of ability in defensive areas. As good as Pedro Porro is going forward, it's another attacking fullback that Spurs have signed that doesn't play to their weaknesses. It doesn't cover their weaknesses well at all, does it? And it's really interesting that Spurs are still in the conversation for Europe. This game might be the nail in that coffin, do you think, Dave?
Oh, yeah. That's it now for them, for me. But I just feel as though it says a lot about their mentality. And we saw it in the United game in the week. Once they got to 2-2, before that, they were peppering United. They had so many chances. Yeah, they were. It was the same in this game. They had a lot of chances against Liverpool. And it almost, once they got that equaliser, they just kind of, obviously it was quite late in this game, but it was the same in the United game as well. They got to 2-2 and they were just happy with a point, it seemed.
Yeah.
And you've just got to question that mentality and the character that their team has. I just think it's non-existent. I think there's very few number of players in there that can really kind of influence that team and kind of drag them out of difficult positions, because they shouldn't be collapsing as much as what they have been. And it's just ridiculous now.
But both of these teams, we talked about Liverpool being very top heavy in their squad and the defensive capability looks weak. It's the same with Spurs. I mean, their front three, Kane, Son and Richarlison even got goals in this game. Richarlison's first Premier League goal of the season after a £60 million move seemed mental that we're talking about that as we approach May. But again, you have to feel sorry for him to a degree, don't you? He thinks he's snatched a point at Anfield. He takes his shirt off, celebrating against his old rival fans. And then a minute later, Lucas Moura, what is he thinking?
I don't even know why Lucas Moura is coming onto the pitch. He's been playing for the under-21s the last few weeks, I think.
It was in two or three games. Bizarre moment, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I will ask, though, Jota got the winner. Should he have been on the pitch? That high foot on Skip, how did you view that?
Yeah, it's a red card for me. I just don't understand. I don't understand why it wasn't looked at. I think I can see that obviously Skip's coming late to head the ball, but you should never have your foot that high on a football pitch. There's no excuses for it. I know in this day and age, maybe 20 years ago, you'd just be looking at that and say that obviously that's not a red card. Do you know what I mean? And you're entitled to go for the ball, but it shouldn't be above shoulder height, like, in any circumstance. It was reckless and dangerous. Do you know what I mean? That could have been a very sort of obviously bad injury, and I think he got away quite luckily, really, on both accounts. Oliver Skip got away from, obviously, with that injury, and Jota's got away with it somehow. And, here we are week after week saying why VAR not interfering, here.
I think particularly with an incident like this as well, when you consider the concussion substitution has come into the Premier League, it's something that's being discussed very eloquently and very prevalently, how the effects of concussion on footballers long term can be so severe. And you look at Bednarek for Southampton the other week against Arsenal, being forced off the pitch because that's the right thing to do. The referee's got a duty to protect players as well. This is the second incident in the last couple of weeks. Watching Villa against Brentford, there was a high foot on Luka Dean. He still got a black eye and a cut across his face from where a stud struck him in the face. Not even a yellow card was given. And exactly the same with Jota. I think it's bizarre that you're not taking more active steps on the pitch as well as expecting the medical staff to deal with it. I think absolutely it should have been a red card.
Do you think it's kind of like a cowardly action from VAR? Do you think they thought, because the referee's given a yellow card, I'm not going to step in and, do you know what I mean, say, oh, well, it's 100% a red card, and they're almost kind of allowing the referees to deal with it on field.
Yeah.
Because it, ever since obviously Howard Webb's come in and leading obviously the committee, it seems like decisions have got even worse.
Absolutely. I find it bizarre because it seems like one of those ones that's a bit more black and white than a normal foul. Like you say, if your foot is above a certain height, that's dangerous play. Mm. And from what I remember growing up and playing football and then watching football, dangerous play was always something that was actually quite quick to be pulled up on. And it seems less so now. Mm. It seems like now we've got technology, we're less sensitive to that one area on the pitch, which is so weird to me because it's one of the most dangerous ones. I think it's bizarre. I think VAR should absolutely have stepped in here. The referee should have noticed in the first place. If your foot has made contact with someone's head at that kind of height, how on earth can you not see that as dangerous play and out of control? I think it's bizarre.
Well, the one, and there was the Man City Sadio Mane one, wasn't there?
A couple of years ago. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah,
it comes to mind, doesn't it?
I'm running out of words.
There's one other slightly unsavoury moment as well, and that did result in an injury, didn't it? Jurgen Klopp running to the fourth official to celebrate his face and pulling his hamstring at the same time, which is kind of instant karma, isn't it? Jurgen Klopp, Dave. I feel loath to come on and start criticising him again. People will laugh at us and say, oh, it's a Man United fan and someone who clearly despises Liverpool picking the bones when we've just won 4-3. Jurgen Klopp was a manager I've got so much respect for as a tactician. He was a personality that I absolutely loved at Dortmund. I think he gets away with absolute murder in the British press and acts far worse than Mourinho ever did and gets completely away with it because he hugs his players. I find it bizarre. I think when you consider the season that Liverpool have had, what's going on with Jurgen Klopp? Does he have a chance to refresh this Liverpool team and start again? His antics on the touchline, do we accept them? What's your assessment of Jurgen Klopp right now?
We've obviously spoken, we wondered where actually earlier on in the season, whether this would be his last season. We know when it was going horribly wrong,
yeah.
It didn't seem to be turning the corner, but they seem to have sort of stabilised a little. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll all depend on next year. I think he'll be there another year at least. But again, obviously other teams are going to strengthen as well in the summer. It might depend on, it might even be whoever they get in the summer. You know, if they aren't backed in the transfer window or, you know, backed adequately enough for what Klopp sees as enough, then I think that could be it.
What do you think of his behaviour generally then on the touchline? Is that something that bothers you?
Yeah, I fully agree, yeah. I just think he does get away with quite a bit. And
yeah.
Even as a United fan, I mean, it's quite funny actually because I feel as though the managers at the top clubs get away with a little bit more than probably lower down. I feel like the scrutiny on some of the bigger teams, it needs to be kind of, it needs to be zoomed in on a little bit more, I feel. I feel like Guardiola, Arteta to a degree this year as well, as he's been obviously criticised for similar sort of behaviour. And I just feel like it just doesn't get punished. And there really just needs to be some consistency across all levels. It's just a really odd one. And it's not just the decision-making on the pitch. It's decision-making kind of obviously above that. The FA and obviously the Premier League need to be kind of looking at this sort of behaviour. And I don't feel it's fair on the referees obviously, you know, have this sort of pressure on them and managers kind of, really, obviously, we don't know what's being said that as well. That's the one thing I quite like about, for instance, rugby, is you can hear everything that's going on. And do you know what I mean?
They're trialling it in France, aren't they?
Yeah. They can't, do you know what I mean? There's no way they're getting away with it. And I quite like that. I don't see that as the only thing I say about football is you probably pick up some language in the crowd that maybe you might not so much in obviously other sports, but I think it'd be a great idea, to be honest. And I think it would reduce some of that sort of volatile behaviour that we just don't like to see.
And it would give us more of an understanding of some of the decisions the refs are making on the pitch. I think it's a no-brainer. One final spotlight to shine before we move on from this game. I wanted to think about Harry Kane, and it's an age-old conversation, it feels like, of does Harry Kane need to leave Spurs to be successful? So he's drawn level with Wayne Rooney now with Premier League goals, 208 goals, which is phenomenal. In a Spurs team that is to deceive at best in the league this season, he scored again. I think that's 25 goals for the season now, which is, again, phenomenal achievement. Watching him interview that after this game. Now, obviously, he's just been come off the pitch. Last minute, they've lost the game, which is devastating. I thought his interview was really interesting because he just looked like he'd lost all answers and he couldn't understand why Tottenham were where they were. Think back to midweek when the United fans were chanting, "We'll see you in June." And he was asked about that after the game as well. Do you think that the way Spurs' season has gone now will push Harry Kane out the door? Because after the whole Man City debacle, it seemed like he got on well enough with Conte that he got back grounded with Spurs and you could see him maybe lasting out there. Do you think he looks at this current Spurs squad and thinks, I just can't be a part of this anymore?
I think he's probably known in the back of his mind that he wants to leave. I think because they had quite a promising start to the season, let's not forget. Mm-hmm. They were firmly amongst, like at one point it looked, it was going to be comfortable for them to be at least third or fourth. And it's just unravelled in a style that's so like Tottenham that I just feel like he's known for a while that this, well, he wants it to be his last season. Obviously, yeah. Whatever agreement or whatever communication he's had with the board and obviously Daniel Levy, who's it's just obviously a difficult person to deal with, as we know. It would just be interesting to see what does happen. I'd be very surprised if he's there, like come obviously the end of the transfer window, because it's got to be it. And it does actually feel he's obviously had, like you mentioned, been linked with United quite a bit.
Do you think that makes sense?
Oh yeah, I was saying at the weekend that I think United have got one of the worst teams in terms of finishing, and if you look at the numbers in the league. Their goal difference just says it all, really. If you took Rashford's goals away from that, then yeah. We'd be obviously in a lot of trouble. But obviously in terms of Harry Kane, I feel like he'd fit in perfectly. I think Ten Hag, the way he wants to piece this team together, he will have an idea. And I think the thing about Harry Kane is he's not just the goal scorer, he's an orchestrator as well. Right. He can obviously dictate tempo, dictate sort of play, drop into those holes as and when it feels. Obviously, they have those runners running beyond him as well, which we've seen for England. I think it'd be the perfect piece. And it almost feels almost a little bit Robin Van Persie-like.
How many more seasons does Kane have, though? Because Van Persie's a great example. Really yeah. only had one excellent yeah. season and then one, which, all right, fair enough, the Ferguson effect obviously took its place there. But
and the David Moyes right
person, yeah, of course. Is Kane the right person for United to be looking at, or is it kind of another Casemiro where it will be phenomenal when it happens, but you're going to be looking to replace them quite quickly afterwards for the kind of money you're going to put into it? What do you think? Is Kane kind of done himself out of a move and waited a bit too long?
I think this team that he'd be coming into, I actually think, has got a lot more potential and in a better spot than what, for instance, if we're comparing to when Van Persie went to United, there was a lot of players that are aging. The squad needed a lot of work.
Terrible.
Ferguson really kind of papered over a lot of those cracks. I actually feel as though Harry Kane will have a lot more around him to work with. Yes, obviously they'll rely on him for goals a lot, which is what, you know, he's been brought in to do, to score goals. But I just feel as though there's much more there to work with for him in this. And I feel like it'd be a definitely good fit. I know there's a lot of murmurs around them wanting a younger striker as well as a more experienced striker, which makes sense, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I just feel like it's time. We've known it for years, haven't we? It's been time for... And that's the really upsetting thing, really, for me. If you are a lover of, you know, watching Harry Kane play... You just want to see him, not necessarily, I know a lot of people flourish. Are saying he deserves trophies, not necessarily deserve them, but deserves an opportunity of being able to to compete for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really, you just don't want to see this go on any longer. He just does fully deserve to be in a position to be able to, you know, to win something. And
yeah,
whether that's at United or anywhere else will obviously remains to be seen. But hopefully it's going to come to a conclusion, because I'm fed up of speaking about it every single year. I'm sure you probably are.
Yeah. On behalf of the Football Diary podcast, I will say I'm so sorry, Spurs fans. it's just a calamity at the moment. It feels like every week we have to come on and talk about something that's gone wrong for Spurs. And maybe a hard reset in the summer is exactly what they need, but we'll see if they get that. Two other teams that will be thinking about where they'll be next season, Bournemouth and Leeds. A 4-1 win for Bournemouth sees them move to 39 points, level on points with Chelsea, Dave. Now, before we come to Leeds and kind of go back onto that negative spin that we've just come off with Spurs, let's give Bournemouth some credit. Let's think back to Scott Parker departing after a 9-0 loss to the previously mentioned Liverpool, saying openly, this squad is not good enough to compete. I have not been backed enough to improve this squad. They cannot stay up. Now they are level on points with Chelsea. Now, I know Chelsea have had two games in hand. They've also spent about £6 billion more than Bournemouth. What an incredible job Gary O'Neill was doing. How have Bournemouth got to this position in the league, Dave?
I just think we all doubted it, really, didn't we? We've said it.
Absolutely.
This season, they were one of the favourites to go down. And I had them in one of my sort of predictions as well of teams go down. And I just think it's almost bordering miraculous what they've done, actually, particularly over the last sort of month and a half. Some of the results that they've picked up and the performances they've put in, I just didn't see it coming, because I just didn't think they had enough in terms of personnel. I think obviously what you mentioned there about Scott Parker saying about them, which in a way it might have even galvanized him saying, you know, these players aren't good enough basically for this team to stay up. It's probably actually what they needed in a way, we need to prove him wrong. And Gary O'Neill, since he's come in, it's just done an absolutely unbelievable job. And the club has been really smart in how they've kept him in that position, but kind of not committing to it too long term. I think they've done the right thing in obviously seeing how the season unfolds, and they've got better and better as the season's gone on. And
would you trust him for next year as well?
I don't see how you can't.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree.
It's obviously the other end of the table, but a lot of fans, for instance, Newcastle fans, are saying if you had the opportunity to get, obviously an elite level manager over Eddie Howe, after all Eddie Howe's done this season, there's no way you can get rid of Eddie Howe of how well he's done as well. It's a similar sort of situation in that almost if both managers have a bad season next year, they're victim of their own success because of how well they've done this season, and nobody expected it, that the expectation next year is to go one better or, you know, do as well as they have done this season. So I don't see how they can get rid of him. They need to keep him.
And there's some players worthy of some immense credit at Bournemouth, actually, as well. And some of them are really familiar faces. Jefferson Lerma scored twice in this game, both fantastically taken goals. A player that we remember from his last spell in the Premier League, obviously. The same with Philip Billing, who I think we've praised on the podcast before. Just looks like an elite Premier League player. He looks like he could go definitely a move above Bournemouth after the season that he's had. And Dominic Solanke, I thought, was really good in this game as well. Took his goal well. He links the play very well. But Gary O'Neill has improved the players that are in this squad immensely, hasn't he? And something Parker probably missed the opportunity to do, right?
And I think you mentioned there as well, Don Solanke. I think he's one who I personally had doubts over whether he could score enough goals in this league.
Yeah.
He definitely started the season slowly, I feel.
Yeah.
But he's definitely kicked on in the last couple of months as well, where he's been scoring goals, and that's what Bournemouth have really needed, somebody just to stand up and sort of be a talisman for them. And he's definitely done that. But I think in his finishing, he's actually quite underrated. I think his finishing is actually quite good in moments. And we saw it with his goal this year. The technique for that finish was brilliant. And it's I'm quite happy for him actually, because he was always a massive talent coming through at Chelsea. He was earmarked as being one of, you know, the big talents to really kind of come through, and a lot of people kind of touted him to be playing for England. And
we got a big move, didn't he, from Chelsea as well? Yeah. It wasn't like he fell straight down the table. Liverpool took a gamble on him as well, but it's nice to see that working out for him. The relegation picture is definitely looking interesting now. We'll mention briefly, Crystal Palace beat West Ham 4-3. Wolves lost 6-0 to Brighton. But it looks like Bournemouth, West Ham, Palace and Wolves as well all look quite safe now. And the gap is starting to open up. And one of the teams that really look in danger are the team that are on the other side to Bournemouth this weekend, Leeds. Patrick Bamford gets what turns out to be a consolation goal in a very underwhelming performance, Dave. And there's a lot of worries for Leeds right now. Their remaining four fixtures, Manchester City, Newcastle, West Ham and Spurs. Oh, Dave, it's not looking good for Leeds, is it?
No, we were just saying before, weren't we, saying, I said to you, I could see them getting 0 points in the rest of the game. I think
maybe Spurs.
I think, yeah, potentially the way Spurs are playing at the moment, but in a way I also feel probably Tottenham are all wrong for them. The way they break, the way they counter-attack, and the gaps that Leeds leave in their defence is just like criminal. And the way they're playing defensively at the moment is just, I can see them, they're conceding goals against everyone. Yeah. And that's the worrying thing. You know, when Bournemouth are scoring four goals against you, as well as they've been doing, they're by no means a clinical team. They've not scored plenty of goals this season. But your next two games against City and Newcastle,
two of the form sides in the league, it's ridiculous.
It really is quite worrying. And
what's funny is the Leeds fans, I think it's the supporters association, a letter demanding for change, saying that they want the manager removed now with four games left. I don't see how any manager would take that Leeds job with four games left and try and keep them up. Because with those fixtures, like you say, you'd predict 0 points for Leeds. That's absolutely damned. They want change at any recruitment stage, whether that be the scouting network, a director of football even. They say that they want half the players removed from the squad, saying they're not good enough. There's real unrest at the club. And it's a shame that you've watched Leeds fight and fight and fight to get back to that top level, and they're making such a pitiful show of this season, aren't they, Dave? Do you think Javi Gracia makes the end of the season?
Do you know what I mean? What else do you do? That's the question. And do you know what? We obviously spoke about when Jesse March got sacked, and actually some of the performances weren't actually that bad. They were just losing by the odd goal here and there. I think defensively they weren't as bad as what they are now. Like, they're even worse now.
Absolutely. They just recruited a load of players for him as well.
Yeah, and that's the thing as well. And I always, we did say at the start of the season we thought we'd be in trouble again this year just because of how bad and how close they were to getting relegated last season. It's really looking bleak for them. I think they're going down. And like you mentioned there, it's not an easy fix, especially with the defensive vulnerabilities that they've got. They concede too many goals. They aren't scoring enough goals. Patrick Bamford's been out of form, albeit obviously scored a consolation in this game. Nonto's really dropped off. He was playing really well for them. But it's just strange. It's just a really strange situation because they actually have some really promising players.
Absolutely.
Obviously, you look at the likes of Somerville, and who's done really well for them, scored some important goals for them this season.
Yeah,
and it just actually really shows how strong the league is, though. And you look at teams like this who've got, you know, a good amount of talent in their team, some really promising young players as well.
Yeah,
and they are really amongst it. And like you mentioned there, it's actually quite. If you look at the table now, it's a stark contrast to what you looked at maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. We were saying how tight it was pretty much from 20th up to around 12th or 13th, and those teams above them now really started to open up a gap. And that is bad news if you're one of those teams down there, because you've got an even bigger chance of getting relegated now when there's, you know, you amongst maybe three other teams, which it's starting to look like.
Yeah, I think it's... It's two from four now, it feels like, doesn't it? So just to move on then, Southampton obviously lost 3-1 to Newcastle. They're on 24 points. They look pretty doomed now, don't they? For clarity, we're recording before the Everton Leicester game, but whatever the result of that is, Nottingham Forest, sorry, will drop into the bottom three in place of one of those two teams. But at the moment, it's Southampton on 24 points, Everton on 28, Leicester on 29, and Forest and Leeds both on 30. Let's look at Nottingham Forest then, Dave, because it followed the season so strongly. They had a really good time where they pulled right up the league, and we were really praising Nottingham Forest. There are definitely still things to praise, but they lost 2-1 to Brentford. It was heartbreaking for them in the fashion that it happened. So they will be in the bottom three by the time this comes out, I imagine. Have Forest got enough to survive though, Dave, even after this result?
Out of the bottom four or five teams, I think them along with Leicester look the more likely to stay up
Agreed.
out of the way teams are playing at the minute.
Yeah.
Who knows what team you're going to get? Who knows what you're going to get from Everton? Most weeks it's pretty dire stuff. They're just obviously getting the odd point here and there. But I just feel as though Forest, they're putting themselves in situations where they're able to get a result from a game, get a point
Yeah.
or 3 points, and it is really fine margins. Like you look at the Liverpool game too, a couple of weeks ago, all of them were set pieces. Like it's
Yeah.
just you can't get away with it in this league.
No.
And do you know what? They're actually not doing too badly for scoring goals. They're creating
Yeah.
chances. They're
Yeah.
scoring goals. It's just they can't shut the door at like the most pivotal times. And it was again the case in these games when you conceding 2 goals in the last 10 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
You are going to struggle in it, and that the worst thing about it is just so demoralizing the way that it's happening. It's almost like they can't quite get it over the line.
Yeah.
It was similar actually. Obviously, the club obviously got a good result against Brighton in the week, but
Amazing.
really good result. And if they hopefully, obviously the next two games they've obviously got Southampton and Chelsea. If they can beat Southampton, I feel like they've got
That's
to. I feel it's a
crucial.
must-win game.
Yeah,
It's a must-win game.
they've got easier fixtures than Leeds because they also have Crystal Palace on the last day of the season, who you can't imagine will be playing for anything other than sending Roy Hodgson off. They've got Arsenal to play, which is obviously the challenging one in there, but I just can't see other teams picking up any points at this stage in the season. They'll pick up more points than Leeds. I think they'll probably pick up more points than Everton. And there are players in that Nottingham Forest squad that are doing everything they can. You can see they're fighting. Keylor Navas, although maybe you could argue he should have done better with Tony's free kick, he saw it very late. The winner was so unfortunate for him. He had a phenomenal game all round. Morgan Gibbs-White looks like he's justifying his price tag at Forest. He's really stepped up. He's a leader in that team now. I'd be disappointed to see Danilo go off injured in this game as well. But Forest, I think, can be happy with the season they've had as long as they just get it over the line. And like you say, that has been one of the problems for them. I think they'll be safe. I agree with you. I think it's Southampton, Everton, and Leeds that go. But we'll see how it unfolds.
I think if they can beat Southampton, I think that'll be a massive boost for them. Then they play
Huge.
obviously Chelsea. They play Chelsea after. There's no reason they can't get a result there because Chelsea are just basically may as well just be on holiday at the minute
Yeah.
with the way their players are playing. They're pretty much effectively playing for nothing this season, apart from pride.
Yeah.
They'll be looking at these two games and be thinking if we can get 4 points out of these two games, then
That could
that'll
be
be a
enough.
massive boost.
That would be enough, I think. I can't see Leeds and Everton getting four more points this season, so I think that would be enough. It's difficult to say. So the last thing to consider then is there has been a change at the top of the league at long last. We kind of saw this one coming, didn't we? But Manchester City beat Fulham 2-1, so not an overwhelming result. The result in midweek against Arsenal certainly was more overwhelming. But that's it now, Dave. Are we saying? Do we just see City winning it all now this season? Can you see them losing again this season?
I think, have they got Brighton? Is that about the most difficult team they've got left to play?
Yeah. It's done, isn't it? It feels like it's inevitable. They got a
I
game in
can't see
hand.
them. I can't see them slipping up now. And Arsenal, I still have a couple of difficult games, which they need to win those.
They've got Newcastle next, haven't they?
Every game for them is a must win, pretty much. So, I mean, the way they're playing at the minute, they just need to focus on themselves. They can't look any further ahead because the way they are playing just hasn't been good enough the last few weeks. Defensively, they've been all over the shop. But yeah, Man City, they've just been doing what they've been doing for the last few years, been doing enough in games. They weren't by no means at their best against, in this game against Fulham. Fulham actually played quite well. But it was a moment of brilliance from Alvarez, who's kind of not really been in the limelight. He's been in the shadows a little bit, hasn't he?
Yeah.
We did speak about he's in a similar sort of position to what Jesus was at City.
He's had
minutes sort of here and there, but he is kind of, you do forget about him a little bit in a way, because obviously the limelight's on Haaland, who's been taking all the plaudits. But it was a brilliant strike, brilliant goal. And
it's the age-old conundrum for a team like Man City of you need depth in your squad, but you don't want the drop-off to be too big. But then to do that, you've got to find a player who's satisfied with a lack of minutes. Now, Julian Alvarez, it's his first season in England, but he's won the World Cup this year, let's not forget. He's clearly phenomenal. He's a young player. You can't imagine he's going to be happy sitting on the bench for City forever. And displacing Erling Haaland is not happening. Haaland himself is a really young player. So it's not like he can just wait it out and he'll get a chance at City. What do you think for Alvarez? Do you see him with a long-term future at that club?
I think he'll be there. He'll be there next season.
Absolutely.
And I think it will be a moment where he's got to decide, is he happy with, you know, this bit part role where he's probably he's going to be playing. You know, I think he's had 24 games in the league this year. But
it's more than I thought you were going to say.
Some of those will be substitute appearances, obviously. Yeah. And he scored eight league goals, which is not bad at all in his first season.
Yeah.
And like you mentioned, he is very young still. But he's the sort of player I could see ending up at Barcelona or somebody like that. Obviously, they've got quite an ageing sort of attack as well. Lewandowski is not going to be around forever. So I could see him being a club like that if he wasn't at City.
That was the first thought I thought for him as well.
I think he will be there next year, but
yeah,
it's definitely one to watch, isn't it? I think Haaland. I can't see him starting with Haaland very often, if not at all. Just because of how City play and how obviously Pep likes his teams to be set up. He's done really well in his first season. He's shown much promise. Like you mentioned, he was one of the stars of obviously the World Cup. It'll be fascinating to see how much game time he gets next year.
I'd be interested to see if he got a loan move even, but I think City need him around because you always need that depth. And after Haaland, they don't have anyone else other than Alvarez, really, unless you look at a very young player. It's a wonderful situation for Guardiola to find himself in, that if Haaland got injured, you've got a perfect replacement around. Slightly different player, obviously, but something.
I
wonder. It's a shame watching those talents kind of waste on the bench. Yeah. And City, people do get fed up with that. Bernardo Silva, for example, is already talking about maybe he'll move on in the summer. People don't like being rotated, not for long anyway. The paycheck and the titles are all good for a year or two. And then after a while, you want to play football, don't you? So
I think there's some
long-term one to watch.
I mean, I think there's some players who probably don't mind it as much. Like you look at Riyad Mahrez. He's been at City for quite a while now, hasn't he? And he's almost kind of accepted his role and he knows he's not going to be playing every single week. But when he does play, I think that's the great thing about Mahrez is that he always actually contributes. He gets an assist or a goal, and the FA Cup the other week against Sheffield United, I think that's the great thing is that Pep always seems to be able to get something out of the players. That I think that's the most important thing is valuing your obviously the squad players especially, and actually instilling sort of that sort of belief when they do actually come in and play, they put performance in and he seems to get something out of them.
Absolutely. Well, things are certainly heating up in the Premier League. There's plenty to watch out for still. We do still kind of have a title race. There's definitely some teams pushing for Europe still, and the relegation picture is definitely an exciting one to watch. So continue to follow our podcast to hear us talk more. You can find us, of course, on Apple Music, Spotify, anywhere else that you download podcasts. If you want to watch some smaller clips of us and see Dave's lovely face while we're talking about this, you can head over to our YouTube channel where we've got some more digestible, smaller content there as well. It's always brilliant to have your support. So please do follow the page, subscribe to us on YouTube, and continue listening to the Football Diary podcast. Until next week, thank you, Dave, for joining me. And thank you for going easy on me and not bringing up the 1-0 win.
There wasn't much to talk about, to be honest. It was relatively uneventful. So, yeah, pleasure.
Thank you, mate. And thank you again for joining. See you again next week.